Yeah, I watched Caligula, and Ron Jeremy is now in a new rendition of Shakespeare and His Dick. Like, that's the movie we're watching. Welcome to the Skipping Fanty Show, Torture Cinema.
That is definitely not a student.
I like how that's the joke you went with, and not, you know, I think they were young Republicans. good. Well, I'm Sean.
I'm Trish.
And on today's show, we'll tell you what we're drinking and discuss 1992's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which our patron supporters selected because they're usually monsters and got lazy this time around. And joining us on this adventure today is Tanya Ransom, who not only decided the theme for this poll, which was 90s vampire and werewolf movies, but also runs Nightlight Pod, featuring fantastic horror fiction by some of the most talented black authors around. Tanya also writes and causes trouble. Welcome to the show, Tanya, again.
Thank you for having me so that I can continue to cause more trouble.
Keep it up. That's all we want in our lives.
Got you.
Before we get to what we're drinking, our summary, and our painful review of the film, a friendly reminder that we want to hear from you. Share your comments with us about this and past episodes at skiffyandfanny.com/listenersuggestions. We want to put together a listener mailbag episode with your thoughts, questions, topic suggestions, and more. So get those thoughts in.
We currently have one really meaty comment about DizCon and a lot of topic suggestions, so we'd like to get more comments, questions, things that we can put into a listener mailbag. So if you would like, please send those in. We would love to hear from folks. So on that note, Trish, what are you drinking?
Well, unfortunately, my milk has spoiled, so to accompany my chocolate muffin, all I have is water.
Are you going to be the only sober one? That's not...
I can go get a liqueur.
Yeah, but you're drinking dihydrogen monoxide.
I am drinking the pure stuff,
that's
yes.
Super dangerous. It's.
If y'all are going to go sad, I could go fetch a little liqueur.
I mean, I'm just sad for you. You do what you want, but...
All right. Chocolate muffin and Frangelico dinner of champions.
Ooh, there we go. I like that.
Trish has returned after what will not be a very long pause in the podcast with actual alcohol. Congratulations, Trish. We are very proud of you. Please drink responsibly at home, please. well, in any case, in my glass, which folks can see on the Zoom call, I have a peach Manhattan.
Mm.
Ooh, fancy.
A double. By the way, I started with a double. This glass is much more full before we started recording. But yeah, so for those that don't know what a Manhattan is, that is brandy and vermouth with some simple syrup. Although this one didn't require it because I used a peach brandy that was already kind of sweet. So it is a peach Manhattan.
Very fancy.
It's super fancy. And Tanya, what about you? What are you drinking?
I'm drinking my trusty old Kraken and Dr. Pepper because I am not fancy, and I just mix some soda with some liquor and call it a day.
Oh, hold on. Kraken is fancy rum.
Okay, that's fair. It is kind of fancy rum.
It's not the cheap rum.
It's not the cheapest rum. It's not the most expensive. It's a middle-of-the-road rum.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, Kraken's kind of, like, it's for fancy people that can't afford really fancy people rum.
Exactly. There we go. It's my bougie rum.
It, precisely. Yeah, you got bougie on it. Well, I mean, I drink a Manhattan. So.
Yeah, well, I'm like halfway through my first glass of it since we got delayed a little bit. So, yeah, I'm going to be pretty drunk by the end of this for sure.
Well, fantastic. Well, let's get started then because, all right. Oh boy, we're all going to be drinking some alcohols. So, now for the main event, we're watching again, or talking about again, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, written by Joss Whedon. Yes, the same fellow who went on to do the TV show. We will talk about that in a hot minute. Directed by Fran Rubu Kuzui? I don't know how to say the last name. It stars Christy Swanson, Donald Sutherland, Paul Rubens, Rutger Hauer, and the sadly very late Luke Perry, also the very sadly late Rutger Hauer. I think everyone else is still alive, but those two are not, and it's sad. So there we go. But on the subject of I'm sorry, I just made it super sad. I apologize.
Way to go, Sean.
But Tanya, you have volunteered yourself to tell us what this movie is about. So if you wouldn't mind, for those at home that literally know absolutely nothing about Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
First of all, what are you doing with your life if that's you? I mean, no judgment, but total judgment.
You gotta know at this point, like, you got the basic idea of what Buffy the Vampire Slayer is, right? It's in the title. It's a character named Buffy who hunts vampires.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And it's, okay, so it's like a tongue-in-cheek sort of, it's not really even a horror film. It's more of like a tongue-in-cheek, kind of scary-ish. Doesn't take itself very seriously, but yeah, it's about this teenage girl who finds out that she is the chosen one to be the Vampire Slayer. And Donald Sutherland's character comes in and he's the one who trains her. And, you know, she's got these incredible gifts for staking vampires and sending them off into the ever after. And we find out what she does with her chosen one abilities.
She starts a party.
Pretty much. Yeah. She goes to a dance. I mean, she does kind of start it because she's on the dance planning committee. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Starts a party. And then vampires invade the party. We can talk about that later.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally the plot of the movie. Like, it's not a complicated film.
No, it's not. It's not. I mean, I was able to summarize it, and I am not sober by any stretch of the imagination, so that should tell you that it's a very simplistic film.
Yeah, and I give it a lot of bonus points for that, because we have watched some films for Torture Cinema where it's like, man, can you untie the Gordian knot of this plot? Because what is
like
this?
There's some where you've asked me to summarize, and I'm like, no, I can't. Like, literally cannot. Not because I'm drunk, I don't know what the fuck I just watched.
The Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter. Yeah. That one.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you what that one's about. Jesus Christ hunts vampires? Like, that's all I got for you. Like, I don't know what
that is. That's not even the full plot of that movie at all.
No. Yeah. That movie was...
It's an adventure.
Yes, it was an adventure. That's a good word for it, for sure. This movie was less of an adventure.
Less so, but it could have been improved by a random musical number.
You know, every movie could be improved by a random musical number, to be honest.
Well, thank you so much, Tanya, for that reminder about what this film is. It was not, in fact, painful, thankfully, even though the script says thanks for the painful reminder. So we're going to get to our likes and our dislikes. And I'm going to propose, because I suspect we all don't hate this movie. And because of that, we may flip it around. And we'll start with our dislikes and end on our likes.
All right. I'm good with that.
So... on that note, Trish, I'm going to throw it to you first. What is your first dislike?
Well, the tagline that I chose gives it away, because none of these supposed high school kids looked like high school kids. They looked like they'd graduated college. I mean, they didn't talk like the high school kids that I remember from the 80s. I wasn't in high school in the 90s, but... Yeah.
I was in high school in the late 90s, but yeah, I mean, but it's California. They have, like, you know, the Valley Girl thing going on. So I just kind of attributed it to that. Like, you know, we didn't talk like that in Texas, but we're, you know, Texas.
Right.
So.
Right. So, you know, mine is a simple dislike, but, you know, I found it one of the reasons that I had a hard time getting into this movie was that nobody looked like who they were supposed to be. I mean, they didn't even look that much younger than Rutger Hauer.
That's true. Like, it is. Rutger Hauer's supposed to be like an ancient as hell vampire. I mean, to be fair, the vampires don't age, but I think he's implied to be like kind of all, not quite middle-aged, you know, but in that vicinity.
Yeah. But can we talk about being turned into a vampire, like, you know, in your late 40s, 50s?
Yeah.
Like, I would be kind of mad. Like, if you're going to turn me into a vampire, do it when I'm, like, young and still hot. And
yeah, like, 25, you know.
I don't want to be, like, middle-aged for eternity. That would fucking suck.
I would love to be 25 because I was my appropriate height and I hadn't gained all of my weight yet. You know, I was still kind of average-sized, you know, Sean.
No gray hairs.
No gray hairs. Still, I mean, let's be honest, I wasn't that sexy. But, like, you know, if, at that point, if I'm a vampire, I can live forever. So I have got all the time to figure out all the skills I need to be sexy without necessarily having the exterior for the sexiness. So I'll get, like, a really cool jacket with, like, the bits that you could flop up, you know, fit. I know, get that in 1992, that's not in anymore, but...
I don't know, like, they popped their collar a few times, you know, when they were at the mall, and, like, the girl got the jacket that, you know...
Yeah, they're like, oh, it's so out of fashion. No, it's not. It's retro.
That Buffy wanted, yeah, and then she got it, and, like, she fucking popped her collar right in front. I would have slapped that bitch.
It was a really snaky move.
I love how she's like, it's so retro. It's like, that literally was...
Yeah, like, she just got through telling Buffy, oh, that's so yesterday, or, you know, whatever it was that she said.
1980s!
Right, and then, like, literally... you know, Buffy doesn't get the jacket that she really liked because her friend was like, you know, it's out of style or whatever, and then, like, she comes up the next day wearing the fucking jacket. Like, that's slap-worthy. Like, that's slap-a-bitch territory right there.
That's, like, this thing, though, that this film is really obsessed with, like, the valley girl stereotype.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They took that to a whole nother level.
Yeah. And not in a good way, like Clueless. Clueless, I think, like, it's very clearly we're making fun of the Valley Girl.
Right.
This is, like, the whole joke is this whole concept.
They were trying to emulate the Valley Girl and just kind of, like, going off of the stereotype. I feel like, anyway, I mean, I'm like, I wasn't around California during that time, but I did feel like it was, like, way over the top.
There's just the, there's, like, this trope that's associated with the Valley Girl that this film is very obsessed with. You know, the sort of self-absorbed, you know, teenager who's also happens to be on the cheerleader team and runs all the stuff at the school, and they all kind of backstab each other, you know, they lie to each other's faces because they're actually terrible friends.
Like, yeah, they're very mean girls, like, definitely mean girls energy.
It's so bizarre. Like, just let people love what they... Just let people be themselves. Like, why do we need
this? I feel
this?
Like even, like, the actual mean girls in high school weren't mean to their friends like that. They were just mean to everyone else like that. But they were, like, mean girls to each other, too, which I found really weird. But I don't know. Maybe it was different there. I don't know.
Well, look, I can't speak from experience, given that I've never been a teenage girl, but...
Just, if you want to watch an actually good Mean Girls movie, there are lots of them around. For instance, Heathers is something that is a really, really good movie with the elite girls at a school still climbing all over each other to put each other down. Right, so there are lots of actual good Mean Girl movies, and this is just kind of a few lazy put-downs.
It's on Shudder as a horror movie, yeah. It was last time I looked, it was on Shudder.
Oh, it's much more of a horror movie than this thing is. Much more.
Yeah. This was, I wouldn't really, like, it had horror themes, but it wasn't a horror movie.
Yeah. Buffy the Vampire Slayer 1992. The closest it gets, the closest this movie gets to horror is David Arquette going,
right, jumping out. And, yeah.
Can we just say that one of the music parts of this movie is when you recognize people that got slightly more famous, like, 6 or 7 years later? Like, there's a Ben Affleck cameo in this movie.
Yeah, like, I saw that. But, you know, okay, so, like, the principal guy, like, I didn't realize this, but my boyfriend was kind enough to watch this with me. And he recognized him as the stapler guy from Office Space. And I was like, holy shit, I think you're right. That's him. Because he was like, listen to his voice. And I, you know, like, listen to it. And I was like, oh, it is him.
Where's my stapler? Like, I'm gonna burn the place down.
It was great. And I was like, oh my God. And then Pee Wee Herman's in it. Like, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, Paul Reubens, as he is known outside of his Pee-wee. Is this before or after he got caught wanking in an adult movie theater?
I think before.
Before.
Because I remember, like, when he got caught, like, it was late high school time for me, and I watched this, like, as a kid. Because my parents let me watch anything.
Yeah. So for folks that don't know, Pee-wee Herman had some legal troubles, one of which was, as I said before, being caught in an adult movie theater, pulling his Johnson out and having a little fun.
But I mean, who doesn't do that in an adult movie theater? Like, I feel like, I mean, I don't know, I've never been in one, but the precise reason why I've never been in one is because I feel like it'd be full of a bunch of dudes jerking it. Like, I don't want to.
Yeah, I don't understand an adult movie theater. I really, like, the whole point of watching pornography is it not, like, to get off? Is that not the function? Are there people going, yeah, wow, this is high-end art?
Right, yeah, like analyzing it for the plot.
Yeah, I like Caligula, and Ron Jeremy is now in a new rendition of Shakespeare and His Dick. Like, that's the movie yeah. we're watching.
But yeah, I don't get that either. Like, I mean, if I want to watch porn, I want to watch it, like, in the comfort of my own home. I don't want to watch it around a bunch of strangers.
Maybe there's just something about porn culture we don't get. Like, that, because we're not in it. Like, maybe there is, like, a high-end porn world that is just out there.
You know what? There probably is. And maybe you should, like, do some research into that and do a torture cinema episode.
Oh, boy. Well, look, I'm not against doing some of the porn... porn adjacent, I would say erotic movies, softcore movies that are clearly genre, but I would say that is going to be like a very hard sell because
you don't want to do the torture cinema on Star Trek porn.
Star Trek
porn. Come on, Sean.
Oh my god.
Okay, all of the patrons, you're listening to this now.
What would Star Trek porn be like? Like, because you know everyone's going to
I don't know. That was just the first thing that popped into my head.
There's going to be shipping.
Chaos like, slash fiction.
Yeah, there's 100% like Spock and Kirk are boning. But like, does Spock in that moment, like, is he into it? Or is he like, oh, Captain, I am putting my penis in. Like, is that how he feels? Like, where is he on the scale of enjoying the moment? Because, like, normally he's super stoic. Like, Captain Kirk would be like, yes, bend me over the table. Let's go. Like, well, actually, Captain Kirk would probably bend Spock over the table because I feel like that's how he would do it. But would Spock enjoy it?
I don't know. But for some reason, that just led me to picture, like, Chewbacca and Han Solo. Porn, and now I'm not okay.
Wow.
I don't know why that popped into my head when you were talking about that, and then I don't know, my mind started to wander, and I mean, there's got to be, like, Chewbacca and Han Solo porn out there somewhere. Like, oh,
there 100%. Is. There 100% is. Well, Trish, okay, look, we have gone so far away from what your like was at this point.
That was a long like.
Oh, man.
Now you two get to talk about your likes.
Well, dislike, in fact. I forgot we were on dislikes.
I mean, you shouldn't have to hunt too hard, Sean and Tanya, but let's hear it.
Well, Tanya, I will give it to you. Tanya, what is your one dislike?
There was some really bad acting in this film. Like, even Christy Swanson, like, I mean, she had her moments where she was really good, don't get me wrong, but like, there were several lines that I was just like, you're Christy Swanson, like, you should be doing better. I think Donald Sutherland was the only actor in the entire movie where I was like, I mean, he had some terrible lines, don't get me wrong, but he was still very professional about it and still did a good job of acting. But there were so many lines that I was just like, ooh, like, I feel bad for you that that's on TV and people are going to watch you do that. Like, as if.
That's really funny considering that Joss Whedon hated Donald Sutherland's acting and improv and ad-libbing.
Well, I mean, he's Joss Whedon, so...
To be fair, we didn't know that in 1992, what we know now about Joss Whedon. Now we know that Joss Whedon is a kind of a scumbag.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's kind of like an obvious dislike, too, is that he directed it. Or not directed, but wrote it.
He wrote it. Although, I think it's worth pointing out, and this goes along with Trisha's point about Donald Sutherland, because... Well, we'll come back to that in a hot minute. One of the things that Joss Whedon went on to do the Buffy the Vampire Slayer television show, which is very different from this movie, drastically.
So different.
Indeed.
That's because the direction that the movie went was not the original script. In fact, if you look at original Buffy and you watch the original Buffy, I think in season one, they make references to things that we've never actually seen or heard of that are from the original script. And the original script is made into, I think, like Buffy Origins or something in comic form.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There is a comic book of the original script, yes.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. And so Joss Whedon had a vision, which is, I think, more in line with what the television show was. And then he was on set and they were just like fucking with his vision. And I think it would be fair to say that for most people, the television show is the better material.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
In almost every respect. There are, There are some people that think otherwise, but we'll come to them later. And Donald Sutherland, which Trish pointed out, is one of the people that caused problems, which I find amusing because if Donald Sutherland was ad-libbing his lines here, you know, improvising, which apparently was the thing that was pissing off Joss Whedon, I don't know what lines he was ad-libbing because he didn't have a lot in this movie.
No, but I mean, I probably would have chosen to do that too because some of the writing was like, some of the lines were terrible. Like, I mean, you know, I like to crack on the actors and say like the actors didn't do a good job of executing, which I mean, yeah, like part of it is on them. But I mean, some of them, like they were just given really terrible lines and you would have had to been like you had to be like a great actor to pull it off and make it not sound super cheesy and awful. So,
I mean, part of that is because of the changes they made. They took out a lot of Joss Whedon's jokes. And that, I think, affected the tone because this film is very silly in a lot of ways, to a degree that I think at times is not good. You know, don't get me wrong, I don't hate David Arquette as much as other people do, but David Arquette hasn't exactly had a career in which you could argue that he is a thespian, because that's not a David Arquette thing. But even here, David Arquette is like extra, extra.
Not as bad as Pee Wee Herman,
though. Oh my God, he's the death scene with Pee Wee Herman.
The death scene was awesome, though. Like, I fucking love that so much. Like, it was, don't get me wrong. Like, if this hadn't been intentionally like a comedic film, then I would have been like, this is fucking awful. But like, he did such a good job of that death scene, you know, because it was so cheesy and awful. And but I mean, he killed it and he made it funny and he made it like amusing. And I think like most actors, it would have just been like very cringy. And it wasn't cringy with him, to me anyway. Like, I actually thought it was hilarious.
Well, so, we had different experiences. I found most of this movie pretty cringy from the beginning.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, like, I first saw it when I was a kid, and I loved it when I was a kid. So I kind of came into it thinking, like, wow, I can't believe this is on torture cinema because I really loved this movie as a kid. And then coming back and watching it as an adult, like, I can see why it's on here. But I guess, like, you know, because I had that, I mean, I was, like, 9, 10 maybe when I watched it. So, you know, it's not like I had like discerning tastes. You know? So there's like a lot of nostalgia for me, I guess.
Well, there is a lot of nostalgia. I think that is a thing I found when I was looking at the Amazon 5-star reviews, is the perception from a lot of people is nostalgia of how they felt about this when they watched it when they were younger. Okay, well, I guess to get to my dislike is
Yes, it's time for your dislike.
You should never let me be this drunk this early in an episode. This is bad.
Oh boy, it's all good. We're gonna be effed up. It's fine. So look, I had some struggle with this movie because the comedy didn't really work for me, and I felt that at times it was too silly. And the thing that I disliked about this movie is that it is too 90s.
It is very 90s, but I actually like that it was super 90s. So I guess that's why we had different experiences. Like,
I like other 90s films that are 90s films.
I'm not really sure you can blame it for being a 90s film.
In the 90s, okay, no, right?
Let me explain why it is too 90s. I think there are great 90s films that are made that are very much rooted in the era, that even comedies that are like, we're making fun of the era and all these kinds of things are great films. Even like late stuff, like when we get to things like when we're verging into the 2000s, like with, you know, 10 Things I Hate About You, right, is a great film that is like right at that cusp. There are great films that are about this period. The thing that really frustrated me about this movie is I felt like they were just cramming so much of 90s-ness into it and trying to make fun of it that to me it came off as a big grating. And the opening is the beginning. And there's lots about the opening. There's two openers. There's the one where she's having the dreams about the past that are like just god awful.
Yeah, they should never have done those ever.
No, what were they thinking? God, they could have spent more time making Rutger Hauer evil and they just made him like Discount Dracula, but also from the Discount Dracula store. He was on sale. Like, it's just a whole thing. But immediately after that is like a cheerleader sing.
Yeah.
But it is, it makes me think of Bring It On.
They were all offbeat.
It's, like, oh my God, they were so offbeat. None of them were on time with the podcast.
Even the black girl was offbeat. Like, how is the black girl going to be offbeat? Like, come on.
It was so bad. And that was the moment where I was like, oh boy, we're in for a 90s experience.
We're in for it.
I really despised the chicken goose caboose. Oh,
the funky chicken goose song.
Is your goose? My goose is totally loose.
So bad, so bad.
It's like, you know, where's your funky chicken? How loose is your goose, or something? Like, it's so ridiculous. How funky is your chicken? How loose is your goose? The goose is loose. Yeah.
Those were terrible.
Is the mascot of the basketball team a goose?
No, it's a hog. Like,
what are they doing?
What do chickens and geese have to do with this? Like, they don't eat, hogs don't even eat chickens and geese, do they?
What are they doing?
It was a terrible cheerleading squad. Like, I mean, I hated, like, cheerleading in general. Like, in high school, I remember thinking, like, cheerleading is so stupid. But, like, that's probably actually why I thought cheerleading was stupid. Because I saw that before I went to high school and was like, cheerleading is dumb. I don't want to do that. I don't want to sing stupid rhymes that don't make any sense. Like, why would I want to do that?
See, this is why I like the movie Bring It On, which is entirely about cheerleaders. But the thing that Bring It On does is it kind of makes fun of what are, like, the really ridiculous parts of cheerleading, with, like, really terrible choreography and terrible chants. Because the very first thing that happens, for those who have not seen Bring It On, is they hire this guy that is supposedly this great, but he's a con man. He's conning this professional cheerleading squad into thinking that he knows everything there is, and he's got the perfect thing that'll let them win the championships. The problem is that he's been selling the same exact incredibly bad choreographed skit to all of these different groups. And when they go to the first championship, that's where they see someone else has done this. And then they have to follow them doing the exact same thing with the exact same music. And it's very much kind of like this kind of thing with, like, certain moves that are, like, it's very much of an era. It's like everyone's doing those moves, you know, they're kind of like, oh, well, look how hip we are. We did some hip moves. And it's like, but your hips didn't
all
move.
Offbeat.
Yeah.
Okay, but can we take a detour for just a second and talk about how I'm surprised that, I mean, Josh Whedon, he didn't direct it. So.
Right.
I guess it's okay. But, like, how some of the cheerleaders wore tights. Like, I totally expected, like,
mini skirts.
Joss Whedon was involved to be like, no one can wear tights. I want to be able to see your ass when you turn around, kind of.
Is that a Joss Whedon thing? Is he we know that Joss Whedon...
He's a total perv.
He's a perv, for sure. He has definitely done things on set that are incredibly gross, to the point that Michelle Trachtenberg had it in her contract that she wasn't allowed to be alone with him, which says a lot about the guy.
Oh, yeah.
But is his filmography is that reflected in his filmography?
I mean, because he wrote this, so, like, I mean, I feel like if he had directed it, there would have... I mean, because there were scenes, like, you know, at that point where they're at the carnival or whatever, where Buffy is fighting vampires and Pike is there, and, like, you know, she lands on him and she's, like, straddling him, and, you know, she's laying down on him, like, in his face. Like, I feel like it's a very Joss Whedon scene that he wrote into there, just because he kind of wanted to see something, you know, sexually charged.
That was
on
weird.
The screen. Yeah, like, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it was totally, like, it was against, like, what she would do in that situation, I felt like. And so I felt like it was very much a Joss Whedon wrote this so that he could see something, you know, because it's PG-13. So he had to keep it PG-13. But he still wanted to see something porn adjacent in there. So he wrote it in there. I don't know. Maybe I'm being unfair to the guy, but he totally deserves it if I am. So.
Yeah, I don't know whether to blame him or the studio for that. But there, I feel like there was definitely a checklist where they had a box that you had to check, you know, sexually suggestive position.
Yeah. Because there was a lot of, like, there were a lot of sexually suggestive scenes in the movie, I felt like. And there were some lines in there that I thought, like, high school girl wouldn't say this to a guy, like, you know, 10 years old. I mean, Luke Perry, like, he had a receding hairline at this point, just a little bit, you know?
He's at 90210 at this time. They altered the schedule of this for him.
Yeah, but he was definitely older, you know, like, there's no way a girl in high school would have been like, oh, that guy's... I mean, maybe I'm wrong, because there are teenage girls that date, like, 50-year-old guys, too, so... But I feel like Buffy wouldn't be that type.
You're wrong.
Okay, I might be wrong.
You're wrong, but only about Luke Perry. I just want to be clear. Just because of it, because when he was on 90210, he was a huge,
he was a heartthrob. I remember that. Like, yeah. I remember thinking, like, I don't see how he's that attractive. But again, like, I was younger, so, like,
yeah.
I mean, I did find guys attractive at that point. Like, I could look at a guy and be like, oh, yeah, he's attractive, but I wasn't, like, you know, super, you know, I wasn't
we're like jumping out
at that point. Yeah. And I remember, right. I remember thinking, like, I don't see why he's such a big deal.
But Luke Perry absolutely was. And I mean, Luke Perry was like, you remember when, this is a weird thing to say, but y'all remember New Kids on the Block. They hit it.
And remember that. I was young, but I do remember them.
Yeah, you remember. Yeah. So like New Kids on the Block was a huge thing. It was a boy band and all these posters were up on like, it's predominantly young women's walls, right? All over the place. And then, like, 90210 hit, and it had the same impact. And then we had, like, the boy band boom of
Dawson's
the late 90s.
Creek. Dawson's Creek. Oh, was that later in the 90s, another, though? Yeah. Like, I don't remember.
Dawson's Creek was late 90s. And so, but that was the same era of, like, there was Dawson's Creek. So Dawson's Creek was, like, oh, it's following 90210, and it's in the era of the boy band. And, like, there's these, like, weird phases that you see of, like, the boy band and that really big hit teen show with 30-plus-year-old actors playing teenagers. And it's the same thing with, like, Dawson's Creek.
It was definitely a thing in the 90s, yeah. And put them in compromising positions, too, because there are a few things in even Buffy that I would have been, like, as a parent, you know, if my daughter was in the movie, I'd be like, no, we're not doing this.
No, you're rewriting that one.
She's not going to straddle this guy that's, like, way older than her and, like, be all up in... No.
That's a thing, too. It's like... These are meant to be, like, 17, 18 years, maybe 18 for a couple, but really, like, 16, 17.
Yeah, because they were seniors, yeah, so mostly 17
Yeah, mostly 17-year-olds, yeah. So, you're filming a bunch of probably 20s, 30s-something people pretending to be 16, 17-year-olds getting in some cases, sexually compromising positions, which is really weird when you think about it. Like,
yeah, especially, like, with older guys, because I feel like, I mean, I don't know, maybe I was different. Like, as a teen girl, there's no way that I would have ever given any of these guys the time of day. I'd be like, no, you're old. Like, ugh. You know, I mean, but the only guy she was like, ugh, about was Merrick, Donald Sutherland's character, which, you know, yeah, I get that. I mean, like, way older.
Also, why, I'm sorry, no way you're getting in a car with, like, an old guy.
Oh, yeah, he's all like, I'm going to take you to the graveyard.
No! No. You find your, sure, I'll meet you in the parking lot, and then you go straight to cops.
Yeah, there's no way. I mean, like, telling him about these dreams, you know, because he's all like, you know, you've had dreams about blah, blah, blah. Like, I would have, like, walked the other direction. I'm like, okay, this guy knows way too much about me. This is not cool. This is fucking weird.
Mm-mm.
I'm going to go home, and, I mean, she probably wouldn't have told her parents because they were like, you know, whatever. You know, they didn't care what she did. But, I mean, yeah, like, I definitely would have gotten in a car with him, even if he did know things that no one should know. That would have freaked me out more, I feel like.
This is the era of the diary, when the diary was a big deal. All, like, teenage girls had, with like, a diary
on it.
Their thoughts. With a little lock. Yeah. Straight up, the first thought she should have is, he broke into my house and he looked at my diary.
Yes.
Because it's creepy the way he shows up
in
this movie.
Yeah, he shows up like when she's, you know, doing her tumbling and like in her sports bra and...
Right? And he's like, you tumble really well. Like,
right, no, ugh. I'd have been like, you need to leave or I'm calling the police.
And then later he actually shows up in the girls' locker room. No!
What are you doing, boy?
Yeah, at that point I'd be like, oh, hell no. And at this point, like, she knows that she can fight because she's been in a fight at this point, right? Like, I'm not misremembering that, right? Like, they had had the graveyard scene. So she knows that she's got, like, some skills, right? Like, he hasn't thrown the knife at her yet, but she knows that, you know, she's capable of defending herself. Like, I feel like if an old dude showed up in the locker room and I knew that, like, I could drive a stake through his heart, that he would have had a
he's
stake
dying
through
that
his
day.
Heart.
Yeah.
Like,
he's not living. That's what's wild to me. And also, Merrick, he should know better. He's been around for centuries.
Yeah, you don't show up in a girl's locker room. Yeah, like, and he remembers all these, you know, past lives that he's had, whereas she doesn't. You know, like, I mean, he's got the experience to know you don't show up in a girl's locker room where people are changing and girls are naked. Like,
bizarre.
I mean, that's like a fucking felony. Like, don't do that. I haven't read the original script. I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised if Joss Whedon had originally wanted a girl walking around like in a towel or in a sports bra and like panties or something. And that's why that scene was in there. But because the movie is PG-13, like his original intention was to get as close to that as possible. And he wasn't able to get that. So like the scene stayed. But his original idea was very much, you know, like camera zooms in on girl's ass as she walks away in her panties. And then...
That's also, like, such a 90s thing of the, like, ass shot.
Oh, yeah.
80s and 90s, is they love the ass walking away shot. In that respect, I'm glad that this movie doesn't go there. And I don't know, based on what we know about what was written into the movie, that was an intention for Joss Whedon, that he wanted necessarily to go that way. Like, some of the things we know is that Merrick was originally supposed to commit suicide because he gets turned. By Lothos, who's played by Rutger Hauer, and he decides to kill himself instead of becoming a vampire. In the movie version, he just dies instead. He doesn't necessarily get turned, he just gets stabbed in the heart, which sucks for him. And
talks for like 35 minutes while he's got the stake in his heart.
It's a whole other different thing. Yeah, it's hard to know. But what we do know about Joss Whedon's vision is that it was meant to be darker in tone. A more dark comedy, more black comedy than this, which is much more silly, a little bit parody. It's much more light.
Yeah.
And it's hard to know exactly what the darkness would have entailed for Joss Whedon, except to say that obviously we get that vision in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the show, which does have sexual themes, although it is on television, and so the limits of what you could show in the 90s and on late 90s to early 2000s is very different on network TV.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether his intention was to also have a lot more sexualized, presenting 30-year-old actors playing teenagers being naked is another, it's hard to say. Although I will just note, it's been a while since I've watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show, so maybe there was a lot more sexualized content than I recall. And if so, this is a good time for people to send us a message via listener suggestions, because we're all drunk and our memories are not great right now.
Well, there were definitely sexual situations, and, you know, one of the major drama turning points for Buffy and Angel was a sexual situation.
Yeah,
and in
true,
one
but
of
it's
the
not
late
show.
Situation,
right. I remember that.
Right. No, they faded to black. I suppose we should go back to...
No, I have a question for you, Trish. I have a question for you, because you are a little bit older than both of us. And so I'm curious, from your teenage years, mm-hmm. who were the heartthrobs for you? Who was like the, ooh, that is the mad sexy?
Oh, gosh. Sean Cassidy from the Hardy Boys, and also a rock star. I thought he was so cute.
He's still handsome.
Yeah, like a picture of him now showed up, and I'm like, yeah, he's like, oh, okay, yeah, when he was younger, yeah.
Oh, damn. He had that look, though.
Very kind of innocent, you know, carefree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's that mm-hmm. look. That's the mm-hmm. look where you're like, oh, you want to take him home to mom.
Yeah, see, I'm into the guys that I wouldn't take home to mom, so...
Ah, see, Trish is maybe into the guys you take home to mom.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, I mean, yeah, he's good looking.
He's a handsome fellow. I miss when guys from back in the day, like, they didn't have to be just so ripped to be attractive.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I like that, but yeah, I don't...
Yeah, yeah, I definitely went more for the geeky cute guy than the buff cute guy.
You had good taste, Trish.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Now we'll go back, because we've gone. This episode is 90% not about Buffy itself. It's just about all this adjacent shit.
You just don't want to talk about this movie.
And I feel like it's totally my fault, because, like, I've never been this drunk this early in an episode, and I keep derailing us, so I apologize. It's my fault, listeners. Please blame me.
I mean, a lot of torture cinema is about the derailments more than about the movie.
That is 100% what this show's really about, because y'all have watched the movie, so you know. And what are we gonna do, sit here and tell you what all happens in the movie? No, we're gonna tell you about our baggage, we're gonna talk about random subjects that come off tangents, and occasionally we'll talk about the movie itself, because that's the point of torture cinema. Because if you just wanted to come and listen to an actual review of the show, you'd listen to At the Movies, you wouldn't listen to torture cinema.
Exactly.
What are you doing,
get your
listener?
Shit together.
All right, let's move back. We're gonna go back. We got to get to our likes about this movie now. We have gone so far afield from this film. Trish, well, Trish, if you would be so kind, what is your one like about this movie?
Well, I'm not sure why I get the first position to take, to me, what is the only really good thing about the movie, but I'm going to go ahead and take it anyway, because this movie was made that eventually led to the series. The series was great, so this movie, not great, but it led to better things. We've already talked about how much better the series is, so that's it. Short and sweet. There, Sean, I've helped your timeline.
You basically have just said the movie was eh, but the show was great and the movie led us to the show. So therefore, thank you, movie.
That's it. Yep.
I think it's a solid like. Like, I don't see a problem with that.
No, there's no problem with it. I mean, it did give us a show that, while flawed, is certainly very significant.
Yes.
And then that show led to Angel, which meant more TV time for David Boreanaz, which I liked very much.
And helped him get on Bones.
Yes, which indeed. I also love that show, too. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, he was handsome.
So handsome.
But, yeah, I mean, Trish, I think your like is totally valid, because the movie led us to a TV show that, you cannot argue, had a dramatic impact on a lot of fans, a lot of people. And the show gave us a lot of great ideas. It's a flawed show, but it comes from an era when it was trying to do things that were really hard to do on television and didn't always land, but did a lot of really cool and interesting stuff. And for that, I think this movie deserves a credit.
Amen.
Success. Well, Tanya, why don't you tell us your like?
Okay, y'all are going to hate me for this. Like, well, maybe not hate me, but you're probably going to disagree with me and you're going to say this is a different experience. But I really enjoyed see, I'm just going to call him Pee-wee Herman because I don't know his actual character's name.
Amelin?
Something like that. Like, I looked it up on IMDb and I can't say it, so I'm just going to call him Pee-wee Herman because that's much easier for me and I'm drunk and
it's
I'm
Amelin.
Definitely not going to try to pronounce it. Okay, cool. Him. His death scene and, like, how they come back to it at the very end, like, at the news story.
I was amused when they came back to him again at the end.
It was so amusing. It was so amusing. But also the line, okay, so like Merrick and Buffy are sitting like in her living room or whatever and they're talking and, you know, she says something and he makes a joke and she's like, oh my God, did you just make a joke? Do you need to lie down? Are you okay?
Like, I know it hurts the first time.
I know it hurts the first time. I laughed so hard at that. And it was such a great line. And I'm like, I'm going to take that with me because I forgot totally about that. I mean, even though I saw this movie as a kid, like, you know, I've forgotten about that line since then. But like next time somebody makes a joke or like they say something smart, especially if they say something smart, I'm going to take that line and I'm saying, are you okay? Do you need to lie down? Like, I know it's hard the first time you say something smart, but so I'm totally stealing that. And so that's a like for me because I can take that into my daily life and use it to make fun of people. So
there were some good lines in this movie, though.
Mm-hmm. There were. Yes. There were so many good lines, but that was my favorite one. That one and the Young Republicans.
That's my favorite line of the whole movie.
I think they were Young Republicans.
They had this look in their eyes, totally cold animal. I think they were Young Republicans. This is a movie you don't skip the credits because they add a bunch of like newsreels and stuff to it, yeah. Which is pretty good.
And the guy from Office Space throwing out the like all these dead people, all these dead teams, like detention, 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 detention. The one at the very end where he like says it three times.
And even at the end, right? He's in that, he's doing an detention. Interview, and he's like, "Well, they all learned a valuable lesson about safety, except for the dead ones."
Except that, you know, and then he follows up, well, they did, but they didn't want to have time to implement it. Like, that killed me. They didn't really have time to implement it.
I mean, I just love that they did have some good jokes, and I wish there were more.
And I wish they had actors that could pull off some, because I feel like there were some lines that should have been jokes, but they weren't because the actors couldn't pull them off.
Well, there is a moment where I don't think that Perry is really, really a comedic actor in this. He doesn't really pull it off.
No.
He has this moment where a guy, one of the vampires is like, now I'm a god! And he kills him and he says, well, now you're a coat rack. which when I say it sounds much more funny, but in the movie does not, like, I forgot that was even in the movie. It doesn't come across as a very humorous line.
Oh, and he has, like, his hair slicked back for the dance like Spike in the TV series. So it's like Pike became Spike and, like, bleached his hair.
Yeah.
And that was it. It was really the only... And bleached his hair and became a vampire. That was the only difference. Because, like, I'd forgotten about the movie.
He looks so bad with his hair slicked back
like that.
Yeah, and
I thought Pike was going to become a vampire because of the TV show. You know, because Spike was a vampire. And I was like, oh, yeah, he doesn't really become a vampire. But, like, I mean, you could tell, like, this character, Spike, came from Pike. Because, I mean, like... That look at the dance where he has his hair slicked back and he has a leather jacket is so Spike from the TV series. It was really cool, you know. But to build on Trish's, like, it was really cool to see how they took some of the characters, like Merrick became Giles.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, how they took bits of the movie and infused it into the TV series in a good way. Like, made them less ridiculous. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm sorry, that was like 11 billion likes. Sean, what were yours?
Well, you took my one like, which was the Young Republicans line, because
I'm sorry,
that line still lands even today. Given that today,
especially today,
I mean, Rand Paul was literally trying to argue today that Fauci is a giant liar to his face, and Fauci told him to go fuck himself in the most political way that you could, which I appreciate. And so,
and one of my followers said, give Fauci a wig and some acrylics. Oh my God, yes!
I mean, I love it. But it's really, I didn't expect that this movie was going to have a political bent, even at that moment. Either. And it is such a jab. Because no part of the line that the character Andy says is meant to be a positive thing, right? They had a look in their eyes.
Is that his name? I don't even know his name. Like, he was so forgettable.
Well, his name was Andy. But he literally says, right, they had a look in their eyes, totally cold animal. I think the thing that I enjoyed the most about this movie is mostly the concept and less the execution.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. For sure. The execution of the TV show was definitely better than
I think the TV show definitely captured this character and the premise a lot better than this movie does. And in this respect, while I don't find myself agreeing with Joss Whedon on a whole lot these days because he is kind of a scumbag, mm-hmm. I think it would be fair to say that I think the vision he intended for this movie was the better vision.
Yes, I would agree with that.
I'm really concerned because this movie is being rebooted as a new TV show.
I saw that, and there's a woman directing it, and I can't remember her name, but I remember seeing that they're going to do, and the Slayer is supposed to be like a black girl.
Which could be cool.
Could be.
Could be.
Could be cool.
But usually.
But sometimes it's not. And I think that this is the thing that sometimes Hollywood doesn't understand, is if you just take old stuff and redo it, doesn't necessarily mean it turns out better.
Especially if you take it and just throw a black girl as the lead instead of a white girl, like, you've got to...
And don't change anything else.
I don't have high hopes, though. Like, I'm going to be honest. I don't have high hopes. It would be great if it turns out... I mean, look at Charmed, like, that series. You know, it was super great. Like, I loved Charmed in the 90s, and now they're, like, rebooting it, trying to make it more diverse. And it's just like, ugh, I'm so disappointed. I want it to be better, and it's not better, and I'm really sad about that.
I want to note that at one point in the original Buffy TV show, they did have a black slayer from Jamaica.
Yeah, they did, and I feel like, oh, who was it that played her?
Her name was Kendra Young. She was, I think, played by Bianca Lawson, I think?
Yeah. It was Richard Lawson's daughter, yeah.
Oh.
Beyonce's dad's daughter.
Whatever people thought about the character itself, I liked the concept for that character quite a lot.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it made me a little sad that she just kind of disappears from the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember being upset about that.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I get why she would disappear from the show, because obviously, like, there's another lead. You can't just, like, come in and bring this other girl in and be the lead. Like, I get it. Don't get me wrong. But that would have been, like, the perfect moment to do a spinoff.
Wouldn't that be cool if that were the show they were doing now? As they were doing a Kendra Young
show.
And
Bianca Lawson is basically a vampire. She doesn't age. They could totally have her still be the lead of that show, and it would be fucking amazing.
I mean, I think a thing for me would be, if you're going to do any kind of retread of the Buffyverse, I think doing a full reboot is just a bad idea. The whole concept of the Slayer is already that a new Slayer shows up every time
Right. Either
a Slayer dies or, you know, the power gets passed on.
Yeah, so it implies that Buffy dies, and so
someone else becomes a Slayer. So why don't you say, aha, we're doing, like, it would be even cooler if they went, well, look, Buffy was a Slayer, but now she, you know, the actress is even like 750 years old now, so she's passing on the power now. Buffy the Slayer is passing on the Slayer power to a new person, and have her be the Watcher.
And I would, yes, ooh, that would be fucking amazing if Sarah Michelle Gellar was basically Giles. Yeah, right? I would watch the shit out of that. See, why don't they have you write this? Like,
they should hire me.
Questions. They should hire you for sure.
That would be so cool. But she was a former Slayer. You can't just like have her be like, well, she's just filling in for Giles. But
she's retired because she's gotten old and her joints hurt, mm-hmm, and she needed to pass the flame on.
Those are the jokes and things that she tells. Is she's like, yeah, I'm working as a librarian. The irony is, like, I never took any of this egghead stuff seriously, and now my joints hurt, and I'm barely even 50. And I'm just falling apart. Like, what's going
bitch,
on?
Bitch, I hurt. I need to, yeah. I
need you to go punch some stuff. Like, oh my God, right. I need a nap.
Last time I did it, my hand hurt for 45 days. Like, I can't do this anymore.
Really what this is like, this podcast, every time we think about how we rewrite anything, Hollywood just needs to hire us as like the story they doctors.
Do.
Right.
They do. Because I would write the shit out of this. Sean, you would write the shit out of this. We would make a great team.
I would have, like, so much fun with this shit. God.
Especially if they let us drink on the podcast. Obviously, this is where all our good ideas come from.
Yeah.
Like, we'll only hire you, but if you're drunk. Okay. I mean, yes, sure. Yes, yes, sir.
We'd
yes,
be
ma'am.
Really cheap because we'd be drunk when we would do the signing of the contract.
Right, when we sign the contract. So I'll do this for $5,000. Whatever.
$5,000.
I get to write Buffy.
$5,000 and an unlimited supply of Kraken.
Right. Like, I'm signing right here.
Oh, like, boy.
Where is the line? Let me know. I'm just saying.
Just saying, Hollywood, call us.
Yep, Sean and I make a great team.
All right. Well, we got to get to final thoughts and a grade. So, Trish, if you would be so kind, please give us your final thoughts and a grade, and obviously short on the final thoughts.
Okay, this was definitely not the worst torture cinema movie that I've ever seen. There are lots better vampire movies out there. If you want vampire comedy that's problematic, you could watch Fright Night. If you want something somewhat less problematic, you could watch Lost Boys. But anyway, like I said, I've seen worse, so C-.
Fair enough. Tanya, what about you?
I'm going to give it a B-, mostly because, like, one, the Mystery Machine van, like, I love Scooby-Doo, and the fact that it had that. Oh, and the Wizard of Oz references, like, in that dance scene, like, you know, where, you know, like, you don't have your little dog, and, like, you know, what was the line that the Pee-wee Herman, he said something that was from, like, the Wizard of Oz. So, like, they had this whole moment that was very Wizard of Oz. So I'm going to give it a B-.
I think that is totally fair.
Why, thank you, Sean.
You're welcome. Yeah, you needed my validation, I'm sure.
I did, very much, very much. I can sleep at night now, so thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't feel like a failure.
All right, well, my final thoughts for this ridiculous movie. Look, it's not horrible, but it's not great. And a lot of the jokes don't land. And there's just a lot about this movie that is very cringy for me. And so I'm with Trish on this. I don't think this technically qualifies as a torture cinema movie. It's a C-. But yeah, we're here because other people rated it low enough that it qualified. So do better next time, Patreon supporters who vote on the polls.
Right. It does need to be more terrible. But I'm really glad that you didn't make me watch, like, a super terrible movie. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Don't worry. Next time you're on, I'll get you. Well, okay. We've done it. We've made it there. As always, thanks everybody for joining us for Torture Cinema today. If you'd like to let us know what you thought about this episode or, you know, any other episode we've done, again, skiffyandfanty.com/listener suggestions. Please get your comments in. If you'd like to follow us, we're at skiffyandfanty on Twitter and Instagram. You can also get the newsletter at skiffyandfanty.com/newsletter. If you like what we do, as always, please support us on patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. We're working on some big projects and we could really use your support. The other thing you can do if you don't have money, or even if you do have money, either way is fine, a 5-star review on iTunes, because that's the thing. And also bonus points for including a dad joke, because I like giving bonus points. As for me, you can find me at Sean Duke on Twitter, on SeanDuke.net, and Patreon.com/TheJoyFactory.
And you can find me at P.E. Mattson on Twitter, on whatsthewordnow.blogspot.com, and co-hosting the Supergirl Supercast and Stardate SG Fun podcasts.
And for our very lovely guest, Tanya Ransom, where can folks find you?
You can find Nightlight Podcast at Nightlight Pod on Twitter and Instagram. You can also listen on nightlightpod.com or anywhere you love to listen to your podcasts.
Do it.
Or else.
We'll send David Arquette as a vampire to come to your house and ruin your
day. Abso-fucking-lutely. No, actually, we'll send Wesley Snipes as a vampire hunter. Wesley Snipes will come for your ass. So
yeah, but he'll have to make sure he doesn't commit tax evasion again. Well, on that note, everybody, awkward ending and scene. If you want to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty or skiffyandfanty.com, our website, where you can get access to all of our fancy things. Our music comes from Holy Mole. You can support him and his work at patreon.com/holymole. Thank you for listening.